All right, so today we're diving deep into this fascinating case, North Carolina v. Alford, 1970 Supreme Court. It really gets you thinking about like what a guilty plea, what it actually even means, you know?
Yeah.
And luckily we've got like a bunch of stuff to dig through. We've got the actual Supreme Court opinion, we've got legal analysis, some articles that break down like how this decision still impacts stuff today.
Right.
So our mission, should we choose to accept it, is to like really unpack this whole thing, see why it's so important, right?
Yeah.
Especially when we think about like individual rights and also having an efficient legal system.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Alford is one of those cases that's so interesting because, well, it's perplexing too. It all boils down to this question. Can you plead guilty, right, to a serious crime? And we are talking murder here, but at the same time, say you're innocent. Like, how does that even work?
It's like, yeah. It seems like a total contradiction, right?
Total contradiction.
And that's exactly the kind of head-scratcher the Supreme Court had to deal with in Henry Alford's case.
So
to really get why their decision was such a big deal, we got to rewind a bit. Back to Alford's situation.
Okay, so picture it. 1963, North Carolina. Henry Alford is indicted for first-degree murder. Now, back then, that was a capital offense. We're talking the death penalty here. And Alford, he kept saying he was innocent. But, the evidence against him was pretty damning.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the court records, you see witnesses saying they saw Alford get a gun. And not only that, they heard him say he was going to kill the victim.
Yeah.
And then there's even people saying he admitted to it afterwards.
Right.
So even who denied it, the prosecution had a lot to work with, you know, if they went to trial.
Oh, absolutely. So you've got Alford facing this mountain of evidence and the very real possibility of, well, execution. His lawyer basically says, hey, we should think about this plea bargain. They offered him a deal, plead guilty to second-degree murder, which was still serious, a sentence of 2 to 30 years, but a whole lot better than the death penalty.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a rock and a hard place, right?
No.
And this is where Alford's plea in court gets really, really interesting. It's not a straightforward guilty. He actually says, and I'm quoting directly from the court record here, I'm innocent, but I plead guilty. It's like, whoa, wait a minute, what? He's saying he didn't do it, but he's accepting the punishment.
Right. And his reason, plain and simple, he didn't want to risk being executed.
And the trial court, they just accepted this.
They did, which unsurprisingly started a whole chain reaction in the legal world.
Right. Makes sense. So what happened next?
Well, first, the North Carolina courts took a look at what the trial court did, reviewed it all, and they actually upheld the decision. They said Alford's plea was voluntary. He knew what he was doing, all that.
Okay, but I'm guessing Alford didn't just leave it at that.
Oh, no, not at all. He appealed, took it to the federal courts, arguing that his plea wasn't truly voluntary. He said, look, the whole time, the death penalty was hanging over his head. That, he argued, was coercion. It forced his hand, even though he was innocent.
It makes you wonder, like, how much pressure is too much pressure?
Exactly, that's the question. And you know what? The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, they agreed with him. They overturned his conviction, saying, yeah, this plea was coerced. It's unconstitutional.
Wow. Okay, so that's what brought this whole thing to the Supreme Court.
Exactly. North Carolina appealed the Fourth Circuit's decision. So now the Supreme Court had this massive question in front of them. Can a guilty plea actually be constitutional, like truly valid, when the defendant is saying, I didn't do it, but pleading guilty anyway? Just to dodge a worse punishment, like specifically in this case, the death penalty.
Okay, so let's break down what the Supreme Court decided, how they got there.
All right. So Justice White, he wrote the majority opinion, and his main argument was, yeah, it's a strange situation, but in the end, Alford's plea was a choice he made, a voluntary choice and a rational one, given everything.
So they're basically saying, just because you have tough choices doesn't mean someone's forcing you.
Exactly. Justice White pointed out that Alford had a good lawyer. He understood what he was being charged with. He knew the possible sentences. And with all that evidence stacked against him, he made a strategic call. He chose to plead guilty to a lesser charge.
So they're looking at it as a calculated risk, like a strategy to avoid the worst possible outcome.
Yeah, and the court made this interesting point, too. They said the Constitution doesn't say you absolutely have to admit you're guilty for a guilty plea to count, especially when there's a lot of evidence pointing to you doing it. And they pointed to all that witness testimony and Alford's own words as proof enough, regardless of him saying he didn't do it.
So they're saying the facts speak louder than words, basically.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's worth mentioning another case here. Brady v. U.S. decided around the same time. That case was all about guilty pleas, where the defendant was trying to get a lighter sentence.
Okay, so how does that tie in with Alford?
Well, the court in Alford used that Brady case as support. They were saying, hey, a lot of guilty pleas happen because people want a better deal. That's just self-interest. And it doesn't mean the plea's no good.
Interesting. So they're acknowledging that the legal system, it's not always about finding the absolute truth. It's also about, like, navigating consequences.
Right.
So the court's basically saying Alford was in a really bad spot, tons of evidence against him, possible execution. His lawyer gave him what seemed like solid advice, and Alford chose the lesser of two evils. They saw it as a rational decision, even if it was tough, but not something that violated his rights. And Justice White even said, this is a direct quote, an individual may consent to imprisonment without admitting guilt if it's a rational choice.
Powerful statement, right?
Absolutely. But it wasn't a unanimous decision, was it?
Oh, no, not at all. There was a strong dissenting opinion. Justice Brennan wrote it. Justices Douglas and Marshall backed him up. They saw the whole situation completely differently.
So what was their perspective?
They felt that having the death penalty looming over Alford's head, that automatically made it coercion, unconstitutional coercion. They argued, you know, when your life's on the line, any plea you make to avoid that, it can't really be voluntary, no matter how logical it might seem. Justice Brennan didn't mince words. He said, fear of death so dominated Alford's decision that it was tantamount to coercion. Strong stuff.
Yeah, it kind of makes you think about, like, the psychological pressure there.
Yeah, for sure. And their concerns weren't limited to just Alford's case. The dissent brought up some big questions about the whole idea of accepting guilty pleas from people who still say they're innocent. They asked, does this really get us to the truth?
Mm.
Which is, you know, what our justice system is supposed to be all about. They worried about convicting someone who might actually be innocent.
That's a huge point, right? Like, how do we balance efficiency with making sure innocent people aren't punished?
Exactly. And there was another opinion, too, a concurrence from Justice Black. He agreed with the result, upholding Alford's plea, but he had some problems with the logic used in another case, United States v. Jackson. That case was about how the death penalty can influence plea bargaining. It just goes to show that even when justices agree on the outcome, there can be disagreements about how they got there.
So let's bring this back to today. What does Alford actually mean in practice?
Well, now when we say Alford plea, we're talking about exactly what we saw in this case. The defendant pleads guilty, but they're still saying they didn't really do it.
So it's like a legal loophole, a way to take the punishment but still say you're innocent.
It's more like a way to limit the risk. You know, avoid a worse sentence if you go to trial and lose, even if you believe you're innocent.
I see, I see. And is it, like, allowed everywhere?
Actually, no. There are a lot of differences in how states handle Alford pleas. Some states, like New Jersey, they've banned them outright. They say it's too risky, innocent people might end up convicted, and it's just ethically murky, you know. A court accepting a guilty plea when the person says they're not guilty.
Yeah, that's understandable. So what about other states?
Well, some allow Alford pleas, but they're really careful about it. They want to make sure it's truly voluntary, not just someone being pressured. So they'll look for really strong factual support for the plea, even if the person isn't admitting guilt.
So it's like they want to be extra sure that the plea is legitimate.
Exactly.
Okay, so big picture here. Why are we still talking about Alford, a case from 1970? What makes it so important today?
I think Alford is important because it shows us these really tough tensions in our justice system. We want it to be efficient, right? And plea bargains, they definitely help with that. But we also need to protect people's rights. And sometimes these two goals, they clash.
Right. It's a balancing act. And like we were talking about before, this case raises some big ethical questions. If we allow Alford pleas, are we sacrificing the truth? If someone says they're innocent but pleads guilty, did justice really happen? And is pressure, especially when you're facing huge punishments, just part of the system now? Where's the line between a smart legal move and actual coercion?
These are exactly the kinds of questions Alford makes us think about. It shows us that even without a confession, a guilty plea can be okay in certain situations, especially if there's lots of evidence and the person's making a conscious choice, even if that choice is heavily influenced by wanting to avoid something worse. But the dissent's points about the pressure of the death penalty and needing a true admission of guilt, those are still big parts of the conversation today.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into North Carolina v. Alford, it really comes down to that tricky balance between a defendant's rights and the practical realities of how our legal system works.
And this case, it really gives you a lot to consider. Does allowing Alford pleas ultimately serve justice? Or is it a way for innocent people to get convicted under pressure, especially with something as serious as the death penalty? What happens to the whole idea of plea bargains if this kind of plea becomes commonplace? It's a really complicated issue with no easy answers, and it's still being debated today.
Definitely a lot to think about. Thanks for helping us explore this case today. It's fascinating and it's really important.
My pleasure.
And to everyone listening, keep thinking about these issues. They're not simple, especially when we're talking about life and death.